attend to things in a different way. So there's four basic aspects to working with emotions. And one of my teachers, Michelle McDonald, gave an acronym to help us remember these four aspects. And the acronym is RAIN, R-A-I-N. And they stand for recognition, acceptance, investigation, and non-identification. So I'll go through each of these. So recognition. Recognition is basically recognizing what the emotion is. Simply recognizing it and naming it can be really helpful. It's sometimes quite obvious, the sense of what the mind is experiencing. It might just be, loneliness, sadness, fear, anger, bitterness, judgment. There can just be a sense, this is what I'm experiencing, and there's no question about it. And there's a power to simply recognizing what the emotion is, if it's possible. And Jack Kornfield likes to mention that some fairy tales actually highlight this aspect of naming by talking about naming the dragon. When in fairy tales, these fairy tale stories, when the dragon is named, when the person confronts the dragon with its name, the dragon loses its power. And often, in a sense, this happens in our mindfulness practice when we see an emotion and we simply name it, anger. Somehow, that just recognition of knowing it's anger, as opposed to being absorbed in the anger, gives us a little freedom. It puts some space around it and lets us have some release around the emotion. It can help to disentangle us from the emotion, and we strengthen our capacity for non-reactivity. So in one retreat, I was experiencing a lot of doubt, and what I thought was doubt at the time, this is a story to help show how the actual naming of an emotion can help. And so I thought I was experiencing a lot of doubt, and I was kind of consumed by the doubt. I had all these thoughts of, what am I doing here, and how should I be practicing, and I felt just consumed by doubt. And I thought I needed to ask a question about the doubt. And so that one morning in the question and answer period, I began to frame my question by describing my experience to myself. To describe what is my experience about the doubt. So in framing the question, I kind of began to describe what the experience was, to kind of look at the experience, in a sense, in that trying to frame the question. And what I discovered in that process was that I wasn't experiencing doubt, I was experiencing fear. That fear was really the base of the emotion. And I didn't even get to ask my question, but it didn't matter because I learned my lesson in that experience. And what I saw after that was that fear was everywhere. It came up all the time, but it didn't have the power to trip me into the thoughts about it, which led to the doubting thoughts, because it was recognized. Oh, there's fear again. There's fear again. It wasn't actually so hard to be with the fear once I recognized, that's fear. Fear is like this. So as this story shows, it can sometimes take some time to actually recognize what we're feeling. The narrative can kind of throw us off sometimes about it can convince us we're thinking something or feeling something else. So it's not necessary actually to search or know exactly what we're feeling. It can help sometimes to kind of describe the experience, as I did in that exercise of trying to frame my question. I described what I was experiencing to myself. It can be helpful to describe our experience and see what's happening, just briefly. And then just choose any obvious word or note, if you're using the noting practice, to help yourself be with the emotion. It doesn't have to be precise. And sometimes our emotions don't feel precise. Sometimes it can just feel like a huge, you know, storm of emotions. And, you know, trying to identify, oh, there's a little bit of anger and there's a little bit of frustration and a little bit of hostility and a little bit of sadness. To try to figure all of that out is just going to send the mind into an incredible analyzing fit. But what you can just do is just notice kind of the big picture, which is chaos or confusion or storm, you know, whatever comes to your mind about the experience. It doesn't have to be perfect, the perfect name. Chaos is one of my favorites when I have no idea what's happening and just like, okay, chaos, chaos. Sometimes we can also meet emotions in our experience, especially in our meditation experience, that we aren't so familiar with. Michelle McDonald tells a story that when she first began to experience calm in her practice, she didn't recognize it. And she said her note went something like, calm? Calm? Is this calm? So, you know, we can start to experience things that we're not so familiar with. And so actually identifying them and recognizing, oh, this is calm, it can take some time. It will happen of its own accord. We will understand, if we simply let ourselves rest in mindfulness with these emotions, an understanding about them, a kind of a wordless understanding will arise. And often the words arise kind of magically out of that wordless understanding. So that's recognition. The second is acceptance. So know that in mindfulness practice, any emotion is okay. There's no emotion that is outside of the realm of what can be experienced in mindfulness practice. You have unconditional permission to experience anything. There's no need to censor or judge these emotions. And sometimes, actually, it can feel like a meditation is a really safe place to have some of these really difficult emotions, like anger. Often we feel that emotions that are really difficult are kind of threatening to us because we're afraid of them, in a sense. But since we are kind of dedicated to the just staying still in the meditation practice, we don't need to worry so much about what we're going to do with the anger that, you know, we may lash out at somebody. We don't necessarily even have the person in front of us. So it's just feeling it. Let it rip if you're angry. Just let it flow through your body. Just feel what needs to be felt. Sometimes it can be very unpleasant to feel emotions like anger. That's actually a lot of the reason why we tend to do something. And so we don't have to feel the unpleasantness of the difficult emotion. We put our attention out in the world and try to blame or thrash out or express the emotion. But you'll find if you try it a few times that what happens, even though it's really, really unpleasant for a little while, to feel these emotions in the body. If you try it a few times, what you'll see is that the emotion dissipates over time. It actually goes away. Now, that's not to say that it won't come back, but you start to see, like with my description of the wanting, I saw the one wanting disappear and then, boop, another one appeared. But it was distinct, it was different. I could see that wanting disappeared and this was a new wanting, dependent on the causes and conditions of this moment. So the arising of our emotions, they come into being, they live their life, and they do disappear. And when you experience that that moment of the disappearance of an emotion, it's one of the most, the disappearance of a difficult emotion, I should say, it's one of the most rewarding aspects of meditation, because it really gives us a sense that we don't have to be a slave to our emotions, that we can just let them flow out of us, and that we don't have to jump onto them and ride with them. So recognition and acceptance, The third is investigation. This is investigating what the present moment experience of the emotion is. Take an interest in exploring the emotion. How do you know you're feeling a particular emotion? What tells you that you're feeling anger or joy or sadness or delight or loneliness? One of the best places to do that is in the body. As I said earlier, there's almost always a physical correlate to the emotion. And you might find, particularly with strong emotions, you might find anger has qualities of heat and contraction in the abdomen or contractions in the throat. Joy has a sense of lightness, of tingling maybe in the body. There's a whole range of physical expressions that you can experience in the body, that the emotion kind of plays itself out in the body. And the emotion, if we think about it biologically, the emotion is a biochemical reaction, and it's running through our whole body. It's not simply, in the brain. It releases things into our whole nervous system, into our gastrointestinal system. So the whole body responds in an emotion. And so feeling the body is a great place to rest the attention when there's a strong emotion. So the sensations in the body are in the present moment. That's one of the reasons it's great to pay attention to them. They're not the narrative around the story. So it really helps us to disengage from the narrative when we bring our attention into the body when we're feeling a strong emotion. But there's one thing to be really clear about. When you're paying attention to the bodily sensations of an emotion, if you're using the noting practice particularly, to note the physical sensations as opposed to the fear. So, for example, if you're paying attention to fear, if you're paying attention to fear, and you find yourself feeling a contraction in your abdomen, and you start noticing the contraction, instead of noting fear, fear, fear while you're paying attention to the contraction, note contraction, contraction, contraction. This does a couple of things. It helps to clarify the mindfulness to know what we're actually paying attention to. And it also helps to disengage us a little bit from the emotion itself. So this has been a really important lesson for me. To disengage these two. And another story I have, again from a retreat, was a time when I was waiting for an interview. And on these retreats, on the long retreats, we typically have interviews about every 3 days. And that's the time we get to talk. We get to talk for about 10 minutes, and that's it for 3 days. So there's typically, at least for me and for a lot of people I've talked to, a fair amount of anxiety preceding the interview. What am I going to say? How am I going to say it? Am I going to be able to speak? I've only got 10 minutes to report my last 3 days of my practice. How do I do this? I mean, it can be kind of stress provoking. So I was waiting for my interview and felt this whole quivering in my body. And because of the whole situation, I was waiting for the interview. Anxiety was typically my experience waiting for an interview. I was noting anxiety, 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 anxiety. And this interview went on for a long time. The interview ahead of me went on for a long time. I had to wait, I think, about 10 minutes before I went in for my interview. And I was sitting there just noting anxiety, anxiety. And at some point, I thought, wow, it must be really strong anxiety. It's just going on and on and on. And at that point, I really just began to notice the quivering sensation in the body. And so I just began noting the quivering and paying attention to the quivering. Even my little toes felt like they were quivering. The whole body was quivering. And as I noted the quivering, what became rapidly apparent to me was that I was not experiencing anxiety, I was experiencing rapture. And that, you know, the whole experience shifted in that moment, just these waves of intense. Rapture is not always pleasant, actually, but these waves of intense rapture went through the body. So this was an example where the whole context of the situation led me to believe I was experiencing anxiety, including the quivering. You know, the quivering kind of has that feeling, you know, if you're anxious, there can be a kind of a quivering feeling to it. But instead of really investigating the actual sensations, I was kind of hooked on the idea that I was anxious. And when I began to pay attention to the quivering itself, it became more obvious to me what was actually happening. So this has been a really important lesson for me, to disentangle these two. I mean, we may think we're feeling fear when we have a contraction in our abdomen, but we may just be hungry. You know, so it can fool us sometimes. So that's recognition, acceptance, investigation. And the fourth is non-identification. We tend to strongly identify with our emotions. We feel like we take them to be who we are. We feel like we're an angry person or a depressed person or a miserable person. I used to consider myself a miserable person. I was completely attached to that idea, and not that I was so happy about it, but it was my belief was that I was a miserable person, and that if happiness came around the bend and I felt some happiness, my instinct was to push it away and say, that's not really who I am. I'm not really happy. So, you know, I'm so grateful to the practice for demonstrating that, you know, happiness is part of my life. So we do seem to, you know, latch on to these moods and feel that they are us. But a more accurate description is that they're actually visitors. These moods are visitors. And they don't define how we are. So when we're entangled with an emotion, there tends to be a strong feeling of I or me or mine. And the narrative, the story around that emotion is very tied up with me, with I, with what I want, with what I can't have or what they're doing to me. Or it's very I-centered often, the narrative around the emotion. So the tools of recognition, acceptance, and investigation, all three of those help us with the aspect of non-identification by helping us to become less entangled with the story, by helping us to bring the mind and body together in the present moment so that we can just let the emotion flow through us, by grounding the attention in the body, by taking an interest in what it feels like to be a human being having this emotion. James Baraz tells a great story of a technique that he used on some of his retreats to help him to disengage from emotions. And he said he pretended that he was an alien who was brought down from the mothership to take up residence in a human being and report back to the mothership what the experience of being a human being was like. This is what they feel when they feel anger. This is what they feel when they feel bliss. So just that simple recognition, this is, it's like this. That's one of my favorite mantras. Ajahn Sumedho taught me this. It's like this. Fear is like this. Bliss is like this. It's like this. So most of the emotions that cause us difficulty in our meditation practice are the afflictive emotions, the difficult emotions. But we can also experience very wonderful, blissful, positive emotions in our meditation. The meditation can bring about wonderful states of peace, calm, tranquility, equanimity, joy. And we can also attend to these emotions, to just pay attention to these emotions in our minds and our bodies. But we have to take care, particularly with these wonderful emotions, not to have the paying attention to them be a little kind of leaning into them and latching onto them. It's very easy with these wonderful positive emotions to get attached to them and think, oh, I finally figured it out. Now I know how to meditate. It's always going to be like this from now on. I'm never going to be miserable again. That's kind of a setup. We don't actually try to think that way. It's just kind of what happens as we start to feel these wonderful feelings. It's a very natural response. So we have to take care to notice that response and reactivity to those emotions. And see if we can also just simply let these emotions arise, persist for a while, and disappear. So I've actually found in my own experience that if I'm doing that subtle hanging on to the happy or positive or pleasant experience, that it's it actually doesn't allow the emotion to come to its full flowering. So joy, for example, you know, that if you're kind of holding on to the joy, it can kind of diminish the joy a little bit. Oh, is it Blake? Is it Blake? He who kisses the joy as it flies lives in eternity's sunrise. I don't know if you know that quote. So, and also another thing that we can sometimes do with these wonderful emotions, they can get very intense sometimes. And they can almost get overwhelming. And I find sometimes the joy in particular can get very, very strong. And it can almost feel like, I can't handle this, you know. And there's a sense of resisting the powerful, wonderful emotion because it's so intense. And I had that experience after one retreat where there's just tremendous amount of joy coming. And I was sitting at my dining room table thinking, I can't handle this. I just can't handle this. And wisdom went through my mind just spontaneously that said, it's okay, it will pass. And with that, it was like I let go of the resistance, and it got really intense. And then the intensity faded, and there was kind of a more tranquil happiness that remained. So, you know, letting that intensity come and go left me in a really very peaceful, happy state after that. So those are my thoughts on working with emotions. And I'd like to open it up for comments or questions, or I'm interested too in what happened for you when I suggested during the guided meditation to pay attention to your emotion. What did you feel or discover in that process? Yeah, it is. I mean, it's sad to some extent, but it's helpful to know it because, you know, if we think that we're always going to feel that way, it's like a setup mm-hmm. for later suffering. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
If we are not our emotions, who are we?
Well, in the In the Buddhist terminology, what we are is a process. We are a flow of ever-changing experience. And there's nothing that we can actually call me in that flow because it's continually changing. And so there's, you know, a flow of emotion, a flow of sight, a flow of sound, a flow of a thought, a flow of another sensation. It's just continually changing. And the process is essentially who we are. And there's nothing really that we can say, point to in that process and say, yep, that's me. Because that thing is going to change and go away. This emotion that I'm feeling is going to change and go away. So if I was that miserable emotion, then when I'm happy, that's not me. You know, so it's just a flow of changing emotions. And part of what the mindfulness helps us to do is to see that flow so that we don't mistakenly latch on to something, and then the latching on is really the setup for the suffering. So when we think, yes, I'm a happy person, and then misery comes along, we suffer from that. Or we think, if we think we're a miserable person and happiness comes along, we don't experience the happiness. So it's the flow is more my understanding. Yeah.
Is the awareness of the flow constant?
In my experience, it's not.
But isn't awareness a constant?
In my experience, it's not. I mean, this is a... There are some Buddhist schools, and it may somewhat have to do with the way you pay attention. You know, it's like you run the experiment this way, you experience things this way. You run the experiment that way, and you experience things that way. So, you know, the description of some of the Thai forest tradition is that there is a kind of abiding awareness. The practice that I've been doing is much more paying very detailed, close attention to the coming and going of everything, including awareness, which comes and goes moment by moment. So, you know, I think it's a huge contention in the Buddhist world. But my own experience is that awareness comes and goes, and mindfulness comes and goes. So, run your own experiment. Okay.
I was wondering about naming and recognition. It seems to me that naming is counterproductive in the recognition process.
Describe a little more what you mean. If you wish, yeah.
Because naming is kind of a kalpa. It's a different state of mind, whereas recognition is more pramana, mm-hmm. more direct awareness of what you're seeing.
Right.
I mean, to use your example, when you named your shaking anxiety, you actually separated yourself from the emotion and came to a false conclusion.
Right.
It's only when you were aware of what was going on that you were able.
That's correct. So to some extent, there is some truth to what you say, that you know, if we use the ideas, it can get in the way of the recognition. But also, that's why I'm not so concerned about coming up with the perfect word. The idea is more with the technique of naming. Is more to engage that part of the mind that wants to think with the process of what you're paying attention to so that it doesn't, you know, wander off. It can. I mean, definitely the process of trying to figure out the perfect word gets in the way. Absolutely. But I do find that the practice of recognizing and using the name, using the noting to stay present is very, very powerful, particularly as things start to change very rapidly. As in the mindfulness practice, we, over time, start to let go of the anchor of attention on one object and open up to the flow, as I was talking about, and to just recognize seeing, hearing, tingling, feeling, you know, just to kind of recognize that moment by moment. It doesn't actually, it becomes more nonverbal almost as it goes. So it is, as I said last week, it kind of is like riding a bicycle initially, that it feels awkward and counterproductive, but it can be very supportive of keeping the mind and engaged in the practice. Yeah. There is. It can be challenging when emotions are really overwhelming. I mean, because it's so easy to get swept away by them. How long do I have? Okay. You can bring your attention as much as possible. I mean, it depends on how often are you engaged in this kind of encounter where these emotions become strong. I mean, is it? But the emotions come back periodically?
They come back periodically, and it's kind of like I feel like I'm sealing it over.
Okay.
Because I just can't cope with it. So.
Yeah, it probably would. You can let yourself feel those emotions with mindfulness. It sounds like there's some fear around feeling them, you know, that there's a kind of a sense that you'll be swept away by them. So, you know, pay attention to that fear of being swept away. Just notice what that feels like. And, yeah, just bring your attention as much as possible to the sensations in the body as much as you can. You know, what does it feel like in the body to have those overwhelming feelings? It can take some time to work through these kinds of things. My practice basically started because I was swept away by anger. I had a situation where there was an event that happened in my life that caused an incredible amount of suffering, and I was very, very angry at this person over this. And I was living in the South Pacific at the time, and the person that I was really angry with was in California. So it was really clear to me that my anger just kept coming up in these waves, and it just would sweep me away. I would be in a full-blown rage in the middle of my workday, thinking thoughts about this person. And I decided to use that rage as a mindfulness bell for myself, that when I experienced that anger, I dedicated myself, that's what I'm going to wake up for. Is that anger. Wherever I was, it wasn't just on the cushion. It was in my day. So whenever I experienced that anger, I was dedicating myself, yes, I'm going to wake up for that. And with an emotion this strong, it doesn't tend to just go away you know, we tend to feed it until it becomes obvious to us. And so what typically was happening initially when I started using this as a mindfulness spell for myself is that I would be in a rage by the time I woke up, by the time I noticed that I was angry. I was in a full-blown rage. And just bringing my attention into my body at that point was quite challenging. But just to notice, okay, angry, wow, well, this, I'm supposed to pay attention, wow, this is, oh, anger. You know, it's kind of like being buffeted around by this incredible intense emotion. And after a period of time trying to pay attention to it, I just had to kind of put it aside because it was so intense in that recognition of the rage. But over months, as I was paying attention to this, over the course of months, what I noticed was that I was waking up. I was not as such a full-blown rage when I woke up the next time. You know, when I noticed angry, I'm supposed to pay attention to this, I wasn't in a full-blown rage. I was kind of just more normally angry. It was a little easier to pay attention to at that point. And then over the course of more months, I began to actually notice, you know, oh, just slight irritation. And then one day, a real crucial recognition, I was, you know, minding my own business, cutting an apple, feeling, you know, noticing the sensations of cutting the apple, and I noticed a thought go through my mind about the person that I was angry with. And that thought was connected to the sense experience of the apple, because the thought was a recollection of being at a fruit stand with this person. And I could see that, you know, in that moment of seeing that thought, I saw the thought appear and disappear. It was an image of being at the fruit stand with this person. And I saw the whole inclination of the body, kind of this movement of the body to jump on that thought and ride it into anger. And because I had been spending so much time paying attention to anger and really feeling how painful it was in this body, the mind just let go and said, you know, I could see the inclination to go to anger, but it was like reaching for a hot pan and, you know, saying, oh, that's going to be hot. You know, the hand lets go of it. That's what the mind did. It let go of that inclination towards anger in that moment of seeing that thought and seeing, where's that taking me? Boy, that's taking me into misery. So that's not to say that I never got angry again at this person, but it really showed me the power of mindfulness to uncover where these reactions come from. I mean, this was a fleeting thought in the mind that I was about ready to jump on and add many, many thoughts to become angry. So it can take months to begin to see where the reactivity starts from. But if you just trust that, just, you know, wake up in the difficulty, let yourself feel that difficulty, and commit yourself to waking up for that over and over again, over time you'll begin to see the process that it goes through. I hope that made sense. So.
Yeah. Would you agree, though, that at times there's a need for being functional just to get through your practicalities of life, that you can't stop and let yourself completely fall apart?
Absolutely.
Be swept away, that sometimes you need distance from it.
Absolutely.
You need to focus on concentration to get distance or whatever.
And in fact, the remaining story of this anger for myself was that I did discover over time, I mean, this went on for years, this anger. And over time I discovered, I mean, that often when the anger would come up, I would be swept away by it. And it was very hard to be mindful of. That one fleeting moment of seeing the arising of the thought that triggered the whole pattern was kind of rare. More often I would wake up in the middle of anger. And very often what I discovered is that if I tried to pay attention to the anger, I would get pulled into it. And so what I did is I would just recognize, yep, I'm angry. This is not productive right now. I can't. This will take me into the anger to pay attention to it. So I would consciously bring my attention to something neutral, like the feeling of my feet on the ground or my butt on the chair. And this is all in daily life that I'm talking about, this practice that I'm doing. Because I knew that if I stayed with it, it would pull me in. So it was a skillful, it wasn't an aversive pushing away. I think that's the key point. If we're recognizing that we have to put something aside, if we can, if it's possible, do it without aversion. Do it with the recognition that, yes, this is what's happening now, and this is not productive for me to deal with right now. I'm driving a car, and if I get into a rage, I may cause an accident. So let me put this aside and work with this later. There's definitely a place for that, and I have used that many, many times in my practice to skillfully put things aside. And for this particular example, I put this aside over and over and over again. I kind of assumed that one day I would be able to have the strength of mindfulness to directly pay attention to this anger. And what I discovered instead happened is that over the course of time, the incidence of anger just got further and further apart, until one day I woke up, or not woke up, but I just recognized one day, wow, it's been a long time since I felt that anger. I wonder what happened to it. And it hasn't been back since. And that was, you know, it was over the course of years. But I never did have to directly pay attention to that anger. It was just the simple, yep, that's anger. Put it aside. Over and over and over and over and over again. That allowed that particular stream of anger to work itself out. Now, it's not to say I've not gotten angry again, but that particular anger over that situation that was causing me so much suffering, that all disappeared. So, yes, thank you for pointing that out. It's we're a little after, so this should be the last one.
Hey, I'm sorry, I have three, but I'll go quickly. Can you repeat what you said about honing the knife at the beginning of the teaching?
So the mindfulness meditation can be thought of as like sharpening a knife. When you are sharpening a knife, it doesn't matter what whetstone you use. There's lots of different whetstones you could use to sharpen the knife with. What matters is that the knife stays in contact with the stone. And so likewise with the mindfulness practice, what matters is that the mind stays in contact with the object, whether it's an individual object like the breath. You stay in contact with the breath, kind of like rubbing. Upandita talks about mindfulness being like rubbing a bowl. You keep the cloth in contact with the bowl to get it polished. So it's in a similar way, you keep your attention in contact with the object. And whether that is, it doesn't matter what the object is. It can be the breath, it can be an emotion, it can be a tingling or a pain. It doesn't matter. And it can be a series of changing experiences as well. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to just quickly go through some exercises for the week. So two basic, aside from your daily meditation practice, two basic things I'd like you to try. So at least once during the week, see if you can ride out an emotion. See if you're feeling a strong emotion, see if you can let it ride through your body. Watch the whole process of the emotion come, stay for a while, and disappear. The second exercise has to do with appreciating positive emotions in your life, so such as gratitude or happiness or joy or generosity or kindness. Just notice when these things come up. And for me, it was very helpful. This is a very helpful exercise because I tended to be focused on the miserable. So actually recognizing how often these positive emotions came up was very powerful for me. And I just want to suggest that you try it as well. So those are my suggestions. And thank you again for your participation and your attention. And I have the handouts again for the week. So for the first 2 weeks, if you missed the first 2 weeks, there's those two. And here's the one for this week. you.